So this is episode 150.
Mm-hmm.
And Harper's not here. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coulson, will you do me a favor and just take clips from the previous 149 episodes and just splice them in?
Sure.
You can just craft responses from clips of old shows. Obviously, after 149 episodes, we know him pretty well. We know what he's going to say. He just wasn't here to say it.
We've That's played it. All these teams before.
That's exactly.
Right. Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That must be Jervis with the shoes on.
That train is off the tracks.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler.
Just prepare to, yeah, so, just prepare to, be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Unbeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. Today is January 3rd, 2016, and this is episode 150. Comedy from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're talking about the games against Atlanta, Chicago, Milwaukee, and Detroit. Joining me are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacer fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Happy New Year. Hope everybody is off to a good 2016. I want to give a special shout out to all my Xavier friends that were watch a lot of Xavier basketball this weekend. One game went horrible. Shout out to Ed Sumner. Hope you're doing well. And the other game went great. Butler's horrible, apparently.
It's like ninth in the country.
Yeah, and Xavier beat him by 20. So. Now, that being said, Xavier was sixth and got beat by 30 by Villanova. So it's one of those weeks.
From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Coulson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? Here's hoping that you all had a safe and happy new year. And looking forward to the year of Pacer Championship in 2016.
I'm going to give a shout-out to Harper, who's on a short suspension, but he'll be back in time.
Shout-out, Harper.
We got to talk about, he's been doing his enforcing, but sometimes the enforcer enforces a little bit too hard.
Sure, you got to stay within the rules.
Yeah, there's an enforcement handbook. It's there for a reason.
He said he read it and signed it, so I don't know.
Also, I do want to shout out to friends Ken and Justin. I got to go with Jason. I went with your sister. We went to not just with her, but she came with a lot of people.
Sure. No, I saw the pictures. We're gonna have some words. Don't worry.
Got to go to their wedding reception / New Year's Eve party. It was a wonderful evening. A lot of friends, a lot of good times, and got to spend New Year's with a lot of good people. It's a good time.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead, whenever you want.
That's the sound of the not all that fast. Great.
We got four games to talk about this week. The first one, Pacers take on Atlanta at the Fieldhouse. Pacers take this one 93-87. Atlanta was kind of the hottest team in the NBA for a little while there. And Monday night, Pacers took them down. I tell you what, I was really, really impressed by the defense of the Pacers this night. They were tenacious, just a lot of trap, a lot of pressure, and the Hawks, I don't think, were ready for that. And it really forced a lot of turnovers, and it really helped Atlanta from getting back into the game. Jason, what did you see from this one?
Well, I agree with you, Joey, and Quinn and Chris also agree with you. They were saying that this was the best defensive effort by the team all season. And I kind of agree, and I think it was sparked by the bench. So in the second quarter, we outscore Atlanta 31-13. We held that team to 13 points in a quarter, which is impressive for an efficient offense like them. And I think we'll talk about it more later. Colson has come over to my side and agreed that the George Hill, any lineup with George Hill and Rodney Stuckey in it, seem great. And most importantly now, you add into that mix another Hill, Solomon Hill.
Solo Cup is back.
26 minutes in this game, only 10 points and like three boards. So it didn't stuff the stat line, but definitely made his presence known. Like, he came in and increased the defensive intensity almost single-handedly.
It's his level of activity, you know. I mean, and you know, the whole, you know, you look at the plus minus on the bench, that, you know, plus 10, plus 11, Jordan Hill's plus 16, Rodney Stuckey plus 15. Solomon Hill, yeah, you're right, didn't stuff the stat sheet, but he shot 50% from the floor. The Hawks are sort of patterned after the Spurs, right? Coach Bud is from the Pop Tree, and he uses his depth, and, you know, Atlanta has been really hot, and we made their depth look not very good, I thought. We looked like the deeper team.
For sure. Also, always nice to get a win when your super-duper star does not play like a super-duper star. And in this game, Paul George looked downright pedestrian. Again, was 3 of 14 for only 9 points. Kind of in foul trouble the whole game. And, you know, Monte Ellis picked up the slack scoring-wise, I think, in lieu. So he scored 26. But just, it's nice to see you get an all-around team effort to make up for that kind of situation. You know, C.J. Miles was also out in this game with back spasms or some kind of back problem, so we're shorthanded as well. Jordan Hill was out. Oh, no, Jordan Hill played this game. Never mind. Sorry. That's the next game.
I thought you were making a Jordan Hill joke.
No.
Okay, no. No, he played well.
What? Guys, I like Jordan Hill now. It's cool.
But what we've got to talk about the end of this game, though, right? Jan Mahimdi coming through in the clutch. We're up three with, I don't know, near the end of the game. Monte Ellis shoots a three-pointer and airballs it. Who's there to catch the rebound, tip it in? My man, Jan Mahimdi. So that put us up six, or that put us up five, and kept us out of reach for the Hawks. So, way to go, Jan.
Yeah, huge play.
I think notably also, Kyle Korver goes 1 of 9 on the day, 0-8 from 3-point, held to just 2 points. That's a win right there. He's one of the best shooters in the league, holding up 2 points. It's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, I thought we did good. I thought we kept most of their guys in check. I was afraid that Kent Bazemore was going to go off early. He hit two early threes, but again, quick timeouts by Vogel to get the defense reset. Paul Millsap kind of killed us on their end, and Jeff Teague was always a pest. But I thought we did a good job bottling him up as well.
This is a big win. It's great. It's great.
Wednesday night, Pacers travel to Chicago. Take on the Bulls. It's December 30th. And you know what? It might as well have been the previous game, because it was decided by Jimmy Butler fouling Paul George at the end of the game. And this one, we actually get vindication a little bit, I guess. The NBA decides after review, after the game is over, after they give the Bulls the 102-100 victory, they mark them up in the standings, and then they look at the tape and they say that it was an incorrect call at the end of the game, that Jimmy Butler did foul Paul George, and it's a mistake, and the Bulls get the win anyway.
Well, thanks, NBA. I mean, I feel much better. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely feel... you know, that's as great as a win.
Well, and this is how I felt after they apologized for the Larry Johnson 3-point play. I really felt like their apology was better than the Pacers going to the finals in 1999. But you know, whatever. Yeah, thanks, NBA. Yeah,
exactly.
But I mean, I get what you guys are saying, but I think it's better than them just like doubling down and you know, agreeing with the referees that when they did make a mistake. You know,
what are you going to do? Sure. I mean, I suppose you're right that the transparency or whatever of that the fact that they now review the last 2 minutes of every ball game and so you know in the Sacramento game that you and I, Joey, saw firsthand us lose sort of at the buzzer. Apparently there were two or three missed calls in that game that would have benefited the Pacers as well. And now the NBA does this for every game. You know, they review the last 2 minutes and put out statements. So yes, it's good. I guess they're at least acknowledging their mistakes, which in some way may correct them in the long run. But in the short term, it's not really too much solace. But this was a game that really the Pacers had no business. This game shouldn't have gone to overtime. The Pacers should have won this in regulation. We're up 7 with 3 minutes to play. We're up 5 with a minute to play and couldn't close the deal. And that's on the Pacers, right? I mean, you got to execute down the stretch. Had a couple bad turnovers down the stretch and, you know, didn't play solid defense. And Jimmy Butler did Jimmy Butler things. But this is a game that, you know, if you're going to be the class in the upper half of the Eastern Conference, you got to close games like this out. This is what good teams win these games.
Yep.
Right.
We went into their building. I thought we controlled it, we controlled the pace. You referred to it as a rock fight, Jason, and it was that. We definitely cranked up the defense. But, I mean, we got out of, our big guys stood up against their really good front court. Lavoy Allen, Jan Mahimni played well. You know, I thought we got enough production out of Paul George and George Hill to get this victory. And you're right. We let this slip away. You go into somebody's house, you get the things out of your team that you need to, and then you just play sloppy down the stretch. It's very frustrating. This was a lost game. This is a lost win. And this is a really important week because we're playing all these Eastern Conference rivals that are directly in front of or behind us in the standings. And this is going to be a week where you need to win all these games to prove yourself as a good team. And we let this one slip away. Very frustrated.
Part of the reason for that, though, I guess you could, if you want to, I'm not making excuses, but part of the reason for that, I think, was that the Pacers came into this game down a couple guys, down CJ Miles again. Jordan Hill was out. Jordan Hill's reasoning for being out was dental work, was how it was initially listed, which is true, but he had like an infected wisdom tooth or something, which sounds horrible. So
yeah, the box score says DMP mouth. Which I like.
That's what it says. That's awesome. And then Jan Mahimni goes down in this game, hyperextends his knee going after a rebound, I think, or something. He just kind of landed funky. And so down the stretch, we were limited to like one big guy.
Yeah, Lavoy Allen was playing center, and I thought he wore down. I mean, I thought he played well in the beginning of this game. First three quarters was a beast. I mean, his line is 5 of 7, 12 rebounds, 10 points. That's great from Chef Boyardee. But down the stretch when we needed him, he was out of gas. He's not used to playing those kind of minutes.
Well, and then luckily we got Miles Turner back in this game. Otherwise, we would have no big guys. So Miles Turner plays 22 minutes in his first game back and is pressed into, like, crunch time situation, like, right away.
Yeah.
And he did fine, but he also got, you know, abused by Pau Gasol three times. So
he's a rook, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
no shame in that. Yeah,
yeah. So, but it would have been nice to have Jan Mahimni on the floor, I think.
Yeah. But no excuses on this one. We should have put this one away.
Well, and really, if you haven't seen the tip in play that Jimmy Butler does for the winning basket, we should link to it, I guess, in the show notes, because it is incredible the way that he tips this shot in. I mean, just super athleticism and skill. That guy's freaking good.
Well, there it is. Several times towards the end of the game where I was fully unclear as to how he put the ball in the basket. You know, with defenders in his face, bad angles.
Guys hanging on him. Yeah, three-point plays. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he was an all-star in this game. He took over late in the fourth quarter and through overtime. Yeah. Like, he was He was the best player on the floor for sure.
Yep. So what's this this foul that we're referring to then that that got
there was no badly? There was no foul. I don't know what you're talking about.
Vogel was not happy about it.
towards the end of the game, the Pacers, they're down, well, 102-100. Lob towards the basket to get Paul George essentially just to lay it in or tip in right at the buzzer. And Jimmy Butler is in the same vicinity. And Bay just runs it. You know, he hits him in the air. He prevents him from making a play on the ball. Both of them end up on the deck. And nothing. No call. And Vogel just loses it. Comes on the court screaming. Because he was right. He got hit. He couldn't take the shot.
I mean, I wasn't as upset about that. I mean, that to me, they were both kind of going for the ball, and it was kind of incidental contact. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It wasn't like Paul had the ball in his hands, and he like clearly fouled him after he was shooting. So I'm kind of okay with that. I'm not as upset about this one as I was about the previous game, where Paul George has the ball in his hand, gets around Jimmy Butler, goes up for a shot, and Jimmy Butler hits him on the elbow. And there's no call. Like, that's just...
Yeah, I mean...
Well, so what we've learned from this is that when we play the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals, that we just have at least a four-point lead and don't have a situation where Paul George has to shoot and get fouled by Jimmy Butler. That's what we've learned. See, the regular season does matter.
Sure. Well, at this rate, we'll be playing at Chicago. Because we dropped two games to them.
So right. So. Good point.
Thursday night, December 31st, New Year's Eve. Pacers come back home. It's going to be an easy one against the Bucks. At least that's what it looked like they were playing. They lose this one 120 to 116. Man, I watched before we left, I saw that the team did not look ready for this one. I didn't think that. You know, first quarter, they're down, ended up 33-24, and they just didn't have it until the fourth quarter when they dump in 39 points. But, you know, these are the games we talk about. Colson, I think you always think, or Jason, they always talk about the Pistons or the 76ers, some of these teams that you know you're better than them, but you don't play hard and you lose.
Well, this was a tall task, I thought. You know, it's the second night of a back-to-back.
True.
After a really intense game.
And tough loss.
Tough loss that goes to overtime when you're shorthanded. I mean, it definitely showed, and you're right, Joey, that Milwaukee did a good job of jumping out on them early and getting an early lead. And we just could never get back over the hump, I thought.
But, I mean, did we, like, take the megabus back? Like, how did, you know, what, it's not like we were in Denver, you know? I mean, I know it's a back-to-back, but we were, it's almost.
They can afford the Greyhound. Don't worry about that.
I mean, it's not like they got home at, like, 5 in the morning is all I'm saying. Like, I get it. It's a back-to-back. But it's Milwaukee, and we looked sloppy as hell. This was the most discombobulated I've seen this team in a long time. Just a ton of really stupid errant passes to the other team. Mm-hmm. Just throughout the game and just lackadaisical defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the bigger thing.
This is one of the worst games I've seen us play. Like, I was ready to start hitting panic buttons. This was not good. We looked like we didn't care, or we didn't care about the other guy on the floor. Like, it was bad.
I mean, to let a team like Milwaukee, who has a ton of great athletes, and can get up and down the floor, but to let them shoot 58% from the floor, which is what the Pacers allowed them to do in this game, you're not going to win ball games when you let teams do that. And the reason for that was that I think you're right, John. On the one hand, we were sloppy on the offensive end, so there were lots of live action turnovers, and Milwaukee does great in those situations. They can get out and go, and I thought they did a really good job of that in this game. I mean, I think I've talked before on the podcast about how I think that Greg Monroe was a weird signing for them because they are really good when things are chaotic and they can just run and use their athleticism. And they did a lot of that in this game.
35 points off our 20 turnovers.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. And they scored like something like they scored 58 points in the paint.
Right.
So a lot of that was like layups, right? Yep. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. Not a great effort game by any means.
Well, except here's the silver lining in this, the bright spot in this game. One of the reasons we get back in this game is because of Solomon Hill. Mm-hmm. He comes in, playing in the fourth quarter. You know, Vogel's out of ideas, I guess. Put Solomon Hill in. He's playing the power forward spot. Instead of the small forward spot, kind of going small ball. And played with a ton of energy and helped get us back in this game. I mean, we didn't get blown out in this game. And it's not just because Solomon Hill. We definitely scored a lot of points in the fourth quarter and people started heating up. But I attribute a lot of this to Solomon Hill's energy and effort. Played great. And I think, you know, he's earning his minutes. You know, for a while I thought maybe, you know, we were just playing him over Budinger, or we were playing him because of injuries, or we were playing him to showcase him for a trade that was rumored. But this kid's earning his minutes, and we couldn't come out with a win, but it was still really it was the silver lining here.
What is a dude that's playing like he's playing for a job?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's great to see. His line is funky. So he played 18 minutes, put in 4 points, and grabbed one rebound, had a steal and a block, but was plus 19.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, he was a part of that charge at the end of that game.
Which is great to see. I mean, we talked a lot last year about how the development of Solomon Hill and that he turned himself into an NBA player. And I think that, you know, we see the evidence of that there. And, I mean, kudos to him for being a pro and being ready to go, you know, at a moment's notice, being prepared. That's like a real skill.
But again, another loss against this Central Division rival that's, you know, has a similar record in this Eastern Conference playoff race. Like, this is tough. You know, you start out the week beating the Hawks and things are going well, and then a couple bad losses.
We got a better story for you. Saturday night, January 2nd, after the new year, Pacers do well in this one, winning 94-82. I think the sort of two stories from this game, Paul George just lights it up in the fourth quarter. He scores with like the last like 17 or 19.
No, 20, 21.
21, I'm sorry.
The final 21 points.
Right. Obviously not normal. Doing really well here.
the crowd was losing its mind, which is so cool. Because like, he was just heat checking all over the place and it was going in. It was so fun. Oh, man. That was really cool.
And then the second story, I think, sort of would be the little scuffle after the end of the game.
Joe, we're calling it the kerfuffle.
The kerfuffle?
Yeah.
In the field house?
Yeah, the kerfuffle in the field house.
Okay.
The falafel in the field house? What?
Now I'm hungry.
That does sound tasty.
The end of the game... I thought it was a little bit interesting. The Pacers had, you know, a 12-point lead, you know, less than the shot clock was turned off. The Pacers get the ball back. George Hill crosses the timeline and is ready to just run out the clock like a gentleman. And Andre Drummond comes up and pressures him, ends up dribbling out of bounds. Crowd doesn't like it. So the Pistons inbound the ball and throw it to Drummond, and Paul George slaps the ball out of his hand. Morris did not like that, and they gave him a little bump and a shove, and that was about it. There's some weird stuff going on in there. Stucky was
well, the bench is cleared.
Yeah, bench was cleared.
More than
so this is all happening the end of the game. The buzzer goes off, so the bench is clear, not during game action, luckily. And everybody meets at center court to surround Paul George and Marcus Morris that are, you know, nose to nose. And, yeah, a lot of shoving and pushing. And you're right, Rodney Stuckey was like a man possessed. He was losing his freaking mind. I'm not sure exactly why. But he seemed more wound up than anybody else.
Well, maybe, you know, this was his old team.
Yeah.
He knows most or all, you know, most of these guys. I think that one of their coaches had grabbed him, and he did not like that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that set him off the most, was he was sort
being grabbed.
Yeah, this dude just comes up and bear hugs him from behind and picks him up and drags him backwards. Like,
yeah.
I don't think anybody would like that, you know?
Sure.
Especially in the heat of the moment. And it's not even his coach, you know? It's like...
Right.
Like, who are you... Like, what are you doing? I don't... Yeah. That whole thing was just silliness, I thought, but like...
It all seemed very odd, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of people were in the wrong there, right? Like Paul George was in the wrong for slapping the ball out of Morris's hands, but... He didn't do it, like, maliciously. It wasn't like Jason Kidd slapping the ball out of that referee's hand or anything. He was like... He just like put his arm up and knocked it out of his hands. And Marcus Morris was just a jerk face, like, who immediately went after him and, you know, gave him a little shove while time was still on the clock.
Right.
I thought.
Yeah, without
And then
a doubt.
Afterwards, Paul turned around and got in his face and was like, "What are you doing? I just owned you. I scored 21 straight points on you." And Marcus Morris didn't like that, so he shoved him back. And then that's when it sort of escalated or whatever, but... Yeah, I don't know. And you mentioned Drummond. Drummond also was doing... That's just, like, not a...
Yeah, just let the guy dribble out the ball.
It's the end of the game. We won the game.
Yeah.
Like, let's just not get hurt. And, like, why are you doing stuff like that? I don't understand.
Now, what had happened just previously to that, though, is that Stan Van Gundy, the coach, had been ejected.
Oh, yeah.
True. Paul George goes up for a shot and hits it because he was hitting everything at that point. And Stan Van had decided that Paul George pushed off, which he did, and just went bananas. And Kyle and I were watching the replay, and she was doing some lip reading, and she's pretty sure he called the ref an asshat, which I really hope is true.
It's kind of specific.
It's pretty awesome.
I really hope that happened. But that's that
yeah,
was
but that's
the
rare. You see the double tech. He got double teched for calling him an asshat, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, apparently asshat is a two tech.
No, that was after... I think that was after he was already ejected. He was walking off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, he'd already been ejected. He's walking off, and there's just the camera's on him, and it looks like he says asshat, which is great.
Okay. Gotcha. And the play... I mean, yeah, Paul pushed the guy a little bit, but he also shook him. Like, mm-hmm. Crazy. Like, he just abused him with a crossover dribble. So I don't think the little push made that much of a difference.
No, but they were losing and they were getting abused. And you know, coach lost his mind. So the team was already a little frazzled. This is a great win. We need to beat teams like this. Again, you know, we talked about this week being the Eastern Conference playoff teams we're playing. And we beat them. It's good. It pushed us from the 7th seed to the 6th seed. You know, granted, we're way far away from the playoffs happening, but this stuff still matters. Mm-hmm. This positioning stuff matters. It was a big win.
Man, don't bring up this, like, positioning stuff. The Pacers can move four spots on a day they don't play.
Yeah, that's right true. Now. That is true. It's a cluster right now.
But no, I agree with you that this was a really nice win in multiple ways. I think, first and foremost, Paul George has been in a gully,
yeah,
I guess you'd call it.
More than a slump, yes.
And so to see him shake out of that, and really he was in a gully in this game until 4 minutes left in the game. Right. Like, he was having a rough night. And then really got himself going again by just driving to the basket. Right, he gets the ball in transition and goes kind of one-on-three, splits two defenders and makes an awesome layup. And that really got him going. And then he comes back down and hits a three.
And then another three.
So that's amazing.
And then another three.
Yeah, and then lots of... And then he was just
clowning. It was so fun. Yeah. And then he was just shaking and baking, and yeah, that was great.
Right. So that's great, just to get him back, right? Secondly, we're going into a stretch of basketball where we're going to play 9 of our next 11 games on the road.
Mm.
So getting a win before we go out on that road trip, and which stops... You know, if we lose this game, we're on a 3-game losing skid going into that. And losing 3 straight times to division opponents, right? So this is big psychologically, I think, to just stop that negative momentum before going into this really tough stretch of basketball.
Excellent, right? Excellent point. Yeah. I think there was also a great find here for Vogel. The bench lineup that he had on the floor in the second quarter and the end of the third or beginning of the fourth. George Hill, Rodney Stuckey, Solomon Hill, C.J. Miles, and Miles Turner. These guys had great chemistry. They moved the ball. You could shoot from every position except Solomon Hill, but he was just aggressive and doing all the things that he's been doing over the last couple games. Miles Turner can block shots and hit that mid-range jumper. I thought Stuckey and George Hill were both aggressive driving from the wing. This was just a really fearsome second unit and got us. We were behind in the second quarter when they got on the floor and got us, an 8 or 9 point lead before they sat down. And then in the fourth, again, we were down and got us up, 3 points before they brought back the starters. So this is a great, really a potential great second unit. Now, granted, you've got some of the starters in there, but it played with some force. And if that's something that's going to work and have some chemistry, you can use that out on the road and hopefully get some wins.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think I'm super excited at Miles Turner back because,
yeah, I agree.
He adds a dimension to this roster that we didn't have before, right, which is a legit offensive threat. Well, maybe he's not super legit yet, but
he's not afraid to shoot, though.
More of an offensive threat from a big guy position.
He wasn't hitting everything in this game. Wasn't hitting very much, but he was not shy. And he also is just had a fantastic block on Andre Drummond. He had a great come-from-behind block on another guy driving to the basket. I think it was Johnson. Like, these blocks that he shouldn't even be able to get because his athleticism.
Yeah, how about that sweet double block that Solomon Hill had on Stanley Johnson?
Man.
That was brutal.
Standing ovation from the bench and the crowd.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's got to hurt, man.
It was a fun game. This was fun. This really saved the week for me because I was getting pretty bummed.
I agree with you. We were talking beforehand, and I was saying, in that Milwaukee game, I think like you, I was starting to push. My hand was resting gently over the panic button.
That's right.
Especially with this, we talked about this in the off season too. That this was going to be our roughest stretch of basketball, like over the new year and into the month of January, basically. So with that in mind and our inability to get that win in Chicago and then play craply against Milwaukee, I was ready to press all the panic buttons, especially going against a Detroit team that had just housed us the last time we played them and had all these big guys. Going into that game, Mahinmi was still kind of hurt.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't play in the Milwaukee game. Jordan Hill didn't play in the Milwaukee game.
He was out with a mouth.
So I'm thinking we're going to have to defend Andre Drummond with, scotch tape and popsicle sticks or something. I don't know how we're going to stop this guy. But then suddenly those guys show up and play, and it made a real difference.
I'm going to shout out again to the free throw defense.
Mm.
Detroit goes 56.5% from the line, which is almost, it was almost entirely Andre Drummond, one of eight.
He's not good.
Well, he could not. He just cannot shoot those free throws.
No, he's really good at basketball. Actually, did you see the stat during the game that he's the first player since Moses Malone to average 16 and 16?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 18 rebounds this game.
Yeah. The guy is a special talent, but he cannot hit free throws.
My favorite instant karma moment of the game, though, was it's the end of the third quarter. There's like 15 seconds left, and Vogel's like, "Ooh, I want to get the last shot of the quarter. Let's do Haka Andre Drummond." So they foul Andre Drummond to put him on the line. He does his job and misses both free throws. But then the Pacers don't get the rebound. And then Detroit gets the last shot of the quarter and they hit a three-pointer. And I was like, dude, you can't. When you have a dude on your team that can get the Haka dude treatment, you don't employ it on the other team. Like, that's just a. It should be a detente, right? Like, it's like, you're not, I won't foul Drummond and you don't foul Mahinmi, and we'll just play basketball, right? But instead, Vogel broke that rule and then got immediately punished for it, which I thought was great.
By the basketball gods.
Yeah. Nobody wants to watch that crap. I don't want to watch Andre Drummond miss free throws.
It's where you and I differ, my friend.
You know what you don't watch as much, though, is Jan Mahimny miss free throws.
True.
Guy's upped his free throw percentage to like 54%.
Yep.
Making me look dumb, calling him looking. I was asking for 45.
He's killing it.
What games we got coming up this week?
Oh, boy.
Game of the week. Oh, wait, no, not yet. That didn't happen yet. It happens after all you right. give us the.
Well, we'll do it. We got a double game of the week this week. So.
Ooh, nice.
We'll get to it. So, as I mentioned, 9 of our next 11 games are on the road.
Oh,
and this week are 4 games, all on the road. Monday at Miami.
The hated
games on NBA TV.
Miami Heat.
Wednesday at Orlando. They're feisty.
They are feisty. Well. Again, playing well in the East. Got to beat that team. Got to do it.
Yep. Friday at the New Orleans Pelicans.
Mm. Pelicans are feisty.
And then Sunday at the Houston Rockets. I guess we'll do a podcast before that game. But yeah, of note, there might be a couple of undebeatables in the crowd.
What?
For the New Orleans and Houston game.
Is this UndebeatedCon 5?
I don't know what the math is.
What number are we
at?
I'll
have to get back to you. I think we're on 6 or something, but...
That's amazing.
Yep.
I am super jealous.
A little Gulf Coast gallop.
Here. New Orleans is my favorite place on the planet, so you guys have a good time, man. And get us a win, too.
Subtitle of this one is The Booze Awakens.
I like it. Yeah, New Orleans. I haven't been to New Orleans since before Katrina, so I'm excited to go back. And that, but was always one of my favorite towns. I know I had a great Mardi Gras once at hanging out with you, Colson.
Yeah, sleeping on my floor, I think.
Yep.
I don't think I've really spent time. I've never been to New Orleans for sure, and I can't tell you that I've spent any time in Houston at all.
Hmm.
I definitely have spent zero time in Houston. I heard that there's good Vietnamese food, though.
That's oh, good. I love Vietnamese food.
So, listeners, if you have tips for things we should do in Houston, tweet us. Tweet at us.
Yeah. It's the Houston Hustle. Hashtag Houston Hustle.
Sure. Yeah, you can hashtag it. Whatever you want. Sure.
You know, you'll never find it if they do that, right?
I don't know how that works, but it's cool.
I know. No. You don't.
All right.
Maybe you shouldn't ask for it.
Joey Crawford's retiring. Did you guys hear that?
I did hear that. And it's about goddamn time, honestly. Sorry, Joey. You know what? I'm happy to say you had a great long career, but suck it.
That's your catchphrase for the 2015-2016 season.
I'm just saying, like that.
Great career, X. Suck it.
the guy... almost always pissed me off. Like, I'm not saying he personally had it out for the Pacers, but it always felt like that. I'm sure a lot of other fan bases felt the same way. He always felt like he was more important than the actual game of basketball, and I think it's good that he's retiring so that basketball can move on without him. Also, congratulations, Joey. Enjoy your retirement.
You know, it's just going to create a vacuum for the most flamboyant NBA referee now. So it's going to be open seats. This might invite more referees that just want to be the spectacle themselves, you know, because they're trying to fill Joey Crawford's shoes.
Sure. But that could be interesting, at least. You just have a lot of people failing at it and stuff. It'd be kind of funny.
It would be good.
People trying to do real dramatic calls. Doesn't Catherine do an impression of Joey Crawford?
She's an amazing fake referee.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying she really is.
What was that movie where Billy Crystal was an NBA referee? Essentially, he was the Joey Crawford.
Forget Paris, NBA. I think.
Oh, yeah. Forget Paris. Should have watched that before I went to Paris. That would have been a good...
But you don't want to forget it.
You just don't watch it after.
You'll be okay, good. You watch it before, but not after. That makes sense, yeah.
Right.
You can't watch it now, Jason.
Yeah.
You'll never see it.
I miss my window.
That's right.
Okay.
I think it's about time, gentlemen.
You think?
I don't know, it's going so well.
I just looked at my clock. I should have said that about 30 minutes ago, but that's 20 minutes ago.
You should have just not pressed the record button. That would have been the most prudent move.
Yeah. If only there was a movie called Forget Undebeatables our listeners could watch.
You keep showing up. It's 150 times. You just keep pushing record. I have no idea why.
It's 150 shows. Plus, we've had a couple of whatever those things were.
Extras?
On the side.
Extras?
Extras. It's a kind description of them.
additional content, I think, is what we should
do. Additional content. I still think we should probably do I'm excited. We're going to re-release all 150 episodes, but we're going to do audio narration of them.
We're going to do director's commentary.
Yeah, over the top of them.
Over the top of an audio podcast.
It's really hard to listen to.
Mm-hmm. What we can do is digitally remaster them, put in crappy CGI, and then somehow burn all the originals so you have to live with the new ones. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
That's what we're going to do so UnabitaCon is like the other big conventions, Comic-Con and the like, but it's just the two of us and we're just burning old footage.
Well, what I'm really looking forward to at UnabitaCon is the fan fiction that people come up with. The Undebeatables, the intervening episodes that people have recorded. As the Undebeatables.
Sure.
These alternate storylines.
What happened between episode 149 and 150?
It was just Coulson and a bottle. That's how it started. These are your writing prompts.
It always ends that way. I don't know if it starts that way.
A tear fall.
Shut it down.
Yeah, I don't know. Now I got into the action. Why did I do that? That's not my job.
That's why you keep hitting record, Joey. You love this shit.
You can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. You can find us on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can find us. Send us a message. You can review us on iTunes. It really helps new listeners find our show. We have t-shirts for sale. We'll be wearing those on the road.
You know what you would also like to wear, Joey?
I do not.
A jersey of the Christmas Attic Tigers with Paul George's name on it. I think you'd love to wear that.
I don't think I would.
It'd be awesome.
I don't know. I just don't want us to forget that that's our rallying cry for 2016. We need the Pacers to wear the Christmas Attic Tigers jerseys in honor of Oscar Robertson's team and his two national championships.
Wait.
In high school?
Yeah. No, we're not honoring the Cincinnati Bearcats. Screw that. Only Christmas Attics and their state titles.
Yeah, not the Bearcats.
We need to have
their one state title.
They had two state titles.
They won two state titles?
Yeah, back to back.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
He did win a national title.
As a Bearcat.
He went to college at Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah, no, but we won't honor that. No, no. Just the Tigers.
No. Yeah. Screw the Bearcats.
For our once and always coach, Stan Van Gundy, you're an asshat.
Asshat.
Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Ham.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.